This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
So it's appropriate for your 175th anniversary to bring a relic of your history back to town. I'm so glad to be here. I really am pleased to be back with you. It's just a treat to be in this space and to see so many of you again. And I'm really humbled that you all would be here tonight. I know you've had a rough week, and I'm sorry that you've had a rough week. So hopefully this evening and tomorrow we can just rest and be, and like Louise wanted us, see Jesus. So that is why I'm here, and really glad to be back. So I titled my presentation for this weekend, Praying with Your Eyes Open. And this is kind of a program that started its development when I was really still in college. Let's see where my thing went. When I was in college, really from the time I was 15, I was already feeling called to priesthood, but didn't really want that. So took some years of prayer and experiencing life. But when I was a junior, I guess between my junior and senior year of college, I had the privilege of going with a professor to Italy to study religious art and architecture. And it was in Italy that I saw this painting. It's kind of small. In real life, it's not. This is Fra Angelico's Annunciation. And what this did for me, so this is a painting that I had seen in books before I went to Italy, but I did not really know where it was. I wasn't expecting to see it that day. But already, the painting had caught my imagination. I just love Fra Angelico's colorful angel wings, and the way that the angel Gabriel kneels before Mary. And when I saw that, it's in Florence at a monastery. We were visiting the monastery where Fra Angelico lived. He painted all the monk cells there. It was like, you know, hey, Angelico, I want the Annunciation in my room, and I want Jesus' baptism in my room. You know, so he went around painting all the cells. Well, this painting is at the top of the stairwell when you are going into the dormitories. And so we were walking upstairs. I turned and looked up, and this painting was just huge. And in that moment, I saw God. And in that moment, what I saw was, Mary, it's time to say yes. That's what I did. So, for a long time, it has interested me to discover how we see God in the world. But I was obedient to my call. I went back to school, finished up my undergrad, then, you know, came to seminary here in Austin and focused on becoming a priest, and really kind of put aside all the interest that I had developed about art. And in 2017, I had the opportunity to go for a sabbatical. And I got a Lilly grant, which was a wonderful gift. And my family and I were able to go to Europe. At that time, so the boys, some of you remember, they were babies. They're not anymore. They're 19 and 15 now. In 2017, they were 14 and 10. And really what I wanted out of a sabbatical was just time to be with my family. That was the main thing. And then when I started imagining what else could I do with my sabbatical, I thought, well, maybe I could get back to my love of art and study that some more. Because what I've always been fascinated by, especially, was the way that the Renaissance artists would take biblical subjects and put them right in their own time and in their own place. And it was a way of seeing the holy right there in their lives. And so I ended up titling the sabbatical The Holy Family. And we went through Europe, and at every stop we visited a Holy Family painting. This is Michelangelo's Holy Family. I did, you know, my research so that every place I wanted to go, there was also a Holy Family painting. But we had a really great time. So I also, because Rick Patrick influenced me many years ago, I started for my sabbatical. I did a little bit of studying photography. I didn't think I could ever be a painter, but I thought photography is a modern way of, again, seeing the holy in our everyday lives. And you can step back behind a camera and start looking intentionally at the world around you and see where the divine is right there. I've always seen that in Rick's pictures. So anyhow, we had a great time and a great trip. And along the way, a certain prayer started bubbling up in me. It was a prayer that I learned actually as a student at St. Mary's Episcopal School for Girls way back when. I lived in Memphis, Tennessee and was just a child. We had daily chapel there, and every day we sang a prayer. This prayer is attributed to St. Richard of Chichester, and supposedly he said this prayer on his deathbed, and eventually it got translated into English. And many of you will know it from the hymnal 1982, or you will know it by a different tune from Godspell. Day by day. So in the tune that we know it from the hymnal, it's really just a series of steps and leaps. You probably know it. Day by day. Dear Lord, of Thee three things I pray, to see Thee more clearly, love Thee more dearly, follow Thee more nearly, day by day. That prayer for me began to take life again. It was so deep in me. When you sing a prayer every day in chapel at school, it gets deep into your bones. And then I found it again in 2017 as a reminder of what I needed to be doing, slowing myself down a little bit and focusing on what is important. And that is God. Here and now in our lives. So for this weekend, we're going to talk about how we can see God more clearly, and love God more dearly, and follow God more nearly. And then this next period of time, we're going to start with seeing God more clearly. So, let's practice some sight. How well can you see that? Sort of. If you need to, I give you full permission to take out your phone and Google it. But let me just first start by, what do you see in this painting? A horse. Big horses behind, right? Right here. What else do you see? Yeah, horse's hoof right there. Man right there on the ground. Anything else you notice? Yeah. The color is kind of down here, isn't it? There's orange. Okay.
Another man in the back.
Yeah. There's the groom back there. Yeah. Does anybody know who this is?
Paul.
There you go. It's Paul. Saul. This is the conversion of Saul, painted by Caravaggio.
I don't think I knew he was a Roman soldier.
Yeah. Uh-huh, it sure does.
A Roman official.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just take a look at, this is where it hangs. So what's your point of view as you're looking at it from the chapel perspective? This is how you would see it in Rome. Yeah, so you're kind of... there you go. Good job, Marion. Right there in Saul's position. A few more things I want you to notice. Chuck's already noticed. He looks like a Roman soldier. How do we know that? This is his helmet, which has fallen off of his head. His sword lays on the ground beside him. He is literally disarmed. So Caravaggio is depicting this story out of the book of Acts. Let me read it to you. Now, as Saul was going along and approaching Damascus, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" He asked, "Who are you, Lord?" The reply came, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. But get up and enter the city, and you will be told what you are to do." The men who were traveling with him stood speechless because they heard the voice, but saw no one. Saul got up from the ground, and though his eyes were open, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus. For 3 days he was without sight and neither ate nor drank. So again, this is the conversion of Saul, painted by Caravaggio. It was commissioned by a guy named Tiberio Taurasi in 1600, and it was painted for the Taurasi family chapel, where Taurasi would be entombed, in the Church of Santa Maria del Popolo in Rome. So that's where you will find it if you find yourself in Rome. So let me ask you this. This is a story about Saul's conversion, his experience of God in his life. Where do you see God in this painting? Yeah. Where does the light shine?
On Paul.
On Paul. From upper left down.
Right. So you can't see the source of the light, but the light is shining. You can see it sort of coming across the horse, but really everything that is lit up is shining directly on Saul, whose eyes are closed and his face is somewhat darker. So this painting is depicting the moment of conversion. And for Saul, he has to be struck blind in order to see. So what was Saul up to before this moment? He was persecuting Christians. He was on his way to go round up some more followers of the way and have them arrested. What happens after this moment?
He's led to Damascus.
He's led to Damascus?
Prison.
Well,
he's not right away.
Not, so, what did, I'm sorry? Okay. So what happens immediately is he'll go to Damascus. God will send another person by the name of Ananias to come and heal his blindness. Ananias, by the way, was like, are you sure? I've heard about him. He's pretty bad. But nevertheless, Ananias follows his own call to go and heal Paul now. And then Paul will go and start preaching the word and astounding everybody. The book of Acts tells us that he was without sight for 3 days and neither ate nor drank. We have here in this passage another example of that three-day pattern. You're familiar with it. What else requires 3 days in Scripture?
Resurrection.
Resurrection. Yes. So Jesus will be in the tomb for 3 days. Also Jonah is in the belly of the fish for 3 days. So it seems in Scripture that we have darkness that precedes salvation. Darkness precedes light and sight. And the same will be true for Paul. So also something I want you to notice, do you see how the artist has made some shapes here? What do you see? That's right. So,
and the legs above it too, you can see there's triangles on both sides of that.
Right, yep. So we've got a triangle here. The triangle formed by Saul's head and hands, we might call an upside down triangle because the point is at the bottom. Now, compare to this painting. This is Raphael's painting, Madonna of the Goldfinch. And Raphael painted this about 100 years before Caravaggio painted the conversion of Saul. So Raphael is more like high Renaissance painting. What do you see here? What do you notice? How does it feel different than Caravaggio's? Say that again.
The Virgin with St. John and
that's right. Those are the people involved here. This is John the Baptist over here with his camel's hair cloak already. And Jesus. Yep.
The flattened perspective as opposed to Caravaggio. Everything is more in a single plane.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. A little further back too, right?
Yeah.
We're not so much in our faces. Let me draw your attention back to shape and form. Do you see a shape?
Triangle.
Another triangle. But this one, how does it go here? Where's the point?
Mary's.
So this is a pyramid, right? Right side up, the pyramid is a very stable form. And this is a really popular form in paintings of the High Renaissance. This feels a little more serene to me. Does it to you, right? Because it's like balanced and stable. Mary's lap provides, you know, just this foundation for the two children in her care. And the colors also are just, again, a little more serene.
Well, it's not a trauma either.
I mean, it's not a trauma, right?
Yeah.
So how does Caravaggio then, 100 years later, depict the trauma or drama of Saul's conversion?
A real contrast between the dark and the light.
That's right. So he's bringing attention to the light by having a lot of dark in the painting.
And he uses a contemporary setting.
He uses a contemporary setting.
Which is not what's in the account in Acts.
Mm-hmm.
It's reaching out to you.
Yes. Right. I mean, I look at this painting and I want to step out of the way. Because that horse's foot is going to come down. And I don't want to be underneath it.
There's real tension in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. So Caravaggio, in depicting Saul's conversion, chooses to depict the very moment when Saul falls down, falls apart. He doesn't choose, you know, the Saul going out to persecute Christians, and he doesn't even choose to depict Paul going out to preach the gospel. He chooses this moment. Why do you think?
That's us.
Because that's us, yeah. So Caravaggio was painting during a season called the Counter-Reformation, when the Catholic Church was kind of initiating reforms based on the critiques of the Protestant Reformation. The Protestants of the day had been really critical of the use of art in worship and in sacred spaces, they saw that art as being idolatrous. They saw art like that, which was used for devotion, as being potentially idolatrous. So the Counter-Reformation came back and said, well, art does have an important place in the church, and its place in the church is as a teaching tool. So when Caravaggio was painting, they were trying to do more art that would teach Christians something that they needed to know. So what do you think Caravaggio is trying to teach with this painting? Powerlessness, yeah.
Saul Paul is in the, he's kind of at rock bottom there. His back is on the ground.
Yeah.
That's the moment he finds God, or God finds him.
Yes. He needed to be disarmed, to be
and
on the ground. Yeah. Right.
On the ground.
Uh-huh. That's a very interesting addition, yes. Our dogs do that, don't they? So,
conversion happens when you're at your most vulnerable. And he was pretty vulnerable there.
That's right.
And I don't know if his arms are raised in please give me forgiveness or praise or whatever. Vulnerability is what I noticed the most.
Mm-hmm.
The picture of Madonna looked to me like she was really muzzling and confusing and thinking and wondering at this child she had and, you know, how amazed that was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, in the Raphael, again, Mary's just doing her pondering thing. She's got her prayer book over here. She's total control of those two children. So there's something very peaceful about that. Here, as you all have pointed out, this is vulnerable. How much do y'all like being vulnerable? No, me neither. And yet, the power of God to to intercede in our lives when we find ourselves in a moment where we're completely disarmed. That's a pretty great gift. You know, as always, they left you the front seats. These good Episcopalians made sure there was room in the front. Welcome. Great to see you. I'm glad you made it.
Given the responsiveness to my texts and emails the last 3 days, nobody in this room likes to be vulnerable.
Yeah. I think it's particularly a part of our culture, maybe. I've noticed that too, pastorally. People really don't want to be vulnerable if they can avoid it. And me too. That's the honest truth. I don't like to feel vulnerable. Nobody does. We feel like we're more in control when we're not vulnerable, when the horse is under us rather than the other way around. And yet this is the moment that makes his life. Right here. So this is a teaching painting, as we've been talking about, teaching us a little something about conversion and about what it is to give our lives to God. And it has to start with seeing God. So the artist, I think, is trying to help us see God. What do you think? Do you see more God more clearly?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, that got us started. Now let's move on to another story. We've practiced seeing God more clearly in the story of Saul's conversion. Let's try starting with the story instead of the painting this time. So here is Luke chapter 2, verses 22 through 23. When the time came for their purification according to the law of Moses, they brought Jesus up to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every firstborn male shall be designated as holy to the Lord. And they offered a sacrifice according to what is stated in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. Now there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon. This man was righteous and devout, looking forward to the consolation of Israel. And the Holy Spirit rested on him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not see death before he had seen the Lord's Messiah. Guided by the Spirit, Simeon came into the temple, and when the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him what was customary under the law, Simeon took him in his arms and praised God, saying, "Master, now you are dismissing your servant in peace, according to your word, for my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the presence of all peoples, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and for glory to your people Israel." And the child's father and mother were amazed at what was being said about him. I don't know if y'all got to go to church for the Feast of the Presentation this week, given that you've had a rough week. But this is the presentation. So what is happening in this story? And why does the gospel writer tell it? What's important about this event in Jesus' life? What do you think?
It's fulfilling a promise.
Okay. So the promise to Simeon is you're going to see the Lord, the Messiah, before you die. What's the promise to Israel?
That this is the Messiah.
That there will be a Messiah. Yeah. So we have fulfillment of.
The thing that has always made me wonder about this verse is why were Mary and Joseph amazed? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I never have understood. It seems to me that they were, after all their encounters with God.
Maybe their senses were dulled. By, oh, that's just God again. you know, I think that they're amazed because now not only are they experiencing this affirmation that Jesus is God's Messiah, but they're seeing that being recognized by others, specifically Simeon. So what is happening in the story is Jesus is being brought to the temple for the presentation. That's part, the story tells us this is part of Jewish tradition, that he would be presented at the temple. Gifts would be made. And then we're introduced to Simeon, who sees the child and gives praise to God. And all of us good Episcopalians here are familiar with the Song of Simeon as we say it in Compline so often. How do you see in this passage the theme of sight developing?
Simeon recognizes God in the child. Mm-hmm.
He does. I think we're left to wonder what exactly he saw. But he saw and he knew.
I think it goes back to what you said also, is that, you know, it's out there for everyone to see now.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just Joseph and Mary. And so Simeon represents us too, right? We the people are seeing the Messiah is here.
It's always struck me that they're following something that is in the law, that's so ancient. It's written down, and they're following it willingly. That speaks a lot to me.
Yeah. So we're going to get to following later, but yes, they are actively just, you know, they're doing what they've been taught is the thing to do. And sometimes just in being obedient, we find that God shows up. So we have the theme of sight developing because Simeon sees. And what Simeon sees is then reflected back in Mary and Joseph, who are amazed. This seeing goes kind of back and forth. So let's imagine for a moment that you're an artist. And let's talk about this. We don't all have to have the same answer because artists get to have their own perspective. But if you were painting this scene of Jesus's presentation at the temple, who would be in the painting?
Simeon.
Gotta have Simeon. You want Simeon, Joseph, and his parents. Okay, you want them all? Or do you want to just focus on Simeon and Joseph, Jesus?
All.
All? Okay,
so.
Okay. Yeah. You want to focus in? Okay. This is why, as artists, you all get to have your own ideas about this. And we did not read far enough to hear about Anna, too. The prophetess Anna is also in the story from Luke. So If you wanted to expand a little further, you could even put her in there.
At the presentation this week, Carter Lear, our seminarian, preached, and he talked about it couldn't have been any more acceptable behavior in worship for this strange man to run up and take the baby from the because he came out of baptism Sunday. He said, what if somebody that we didn't know ran up and just took the baby and started saying these things? So parents will be very close in that picture.
Okay, I take your point. So my next question is, what expressions do these people reveal in your painting? Are Mary and Joseph over, like, looking very nervous? What do you think?
I think maybe that amazement, like you described in there, would be on their face. And then maybe light coming from Jesus onto the face of Simeon.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Good. Ah, great question. Yep. That was going to be the next question. Where would you put light and shadow in your painting?
I love the idea of the parents just going about their business, what they're there to do, and they're proceeding. And I can almost see Jesus looking over the shoulder of Mary at Simeon, and Simeon looking at Jesus, and that being the connection.
Oh. There's a beautiful painting. Mm-hmm. Are you an artist? No. Do you want to make that for us? I like that. Where would you want to draw the viewer's attention?
Onto Jesus.
To the baby.
Good. So we could focus on Jesus because Jesus is the light of the nations, or we could focus on Simeon, who is proclaiming this for all of us to hear. Oh, what did I do? There's a little switch there. I didn't know about that switch. Okay.
Mary.
Yep.
Mary?
Yes.
Do you have knowledge of any artist that ever painted this scene?
Yeah, but I think it's time for a happy hour. Oh, good. I love it when a group like predicts what you're going to say next. Because then I think I must be leading them along well. But actually, I thought we would take our break here. And now, over happy hour, you have something more to talk about and think about. Because before I show you any existing paintings, I want you thinking more about, again, if you were the artist, how would you depict this moment where Simeon sees Jesus and knows that the Messiah has come? Play with that over happy hour. Have fun enjoying one another and sharing this time together.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.